You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Along with Joel and Kyrie, we'll ride with you until 10 o'clock. Then it's Freddie and Fitzsimmons who are in for me on here on 98.7 ESPN. Once again, thank you, Don and Peter. Great job on the Michael K Show leading us in. We will take the baton and run with it. A lot of things to chat with you tonight. We've got a couple of guests that will join us. Trevor Scales, who folks who listen to ESPN New York Tonight are familiar with. He's our college football guy, and we'll get his opinion. We had Adam Rittenberg on Tuesday night. We'll see what has changed with college football and will we have it, will we not have it, how many conferences will play, how many conferences won't play. Trevor Scales will join us at 8:30 tonight. And Rich Catino, who covers the Mets for us here on 98.7 ESPN, will join me at 9:30. We'll recap the Mets breaking even in their four-game series with the Nationals, winning the last two. A big scare with Jeff McNeil in the first inning, who makes an unbelievable catch. Otherwise, maybe they lose 3 or 4 to the Nats. Rich Catino will join us a little later here on 98.7 ESPN. But tonight, there's two things that's on my mind I want to get your thoughts about. You can also reach me at Hardesty ESPN at ESPNNY98_7FM. Let me start with some baseball, shall we? I want to talk about the Yankees. And I know last night we were talking about Aaron Judge. We were talking about his abilities and injuries and stuff like that. But I want to talk about a guy who is one of the biggest question marks, but the biggest flirt with Yankee fans. Okay? And that guy is the redhead, Clint Frazier. I remember whenever he comes up from the minor leagues or wherever he is and gets in the Yankee lineup, there's this battle, right? There's this love affair with Yankee fans who simply adore Clint Frazier and his offensive abilities. Natural hitter, quick hands, all the scouts rave about what he brings to a lineup. Then you put him in the field and you're like, oh gosh, let me hide my eyes and hope that the ball doesn't find him. And you know what happens if you love baseball. Wherever the guy is that has trouble catching the ball always finds him. Always. You can't hide from the ball. It'll find you. So if you were able to work on his outfield skills, this is a guy who can hit the baseball. There's no question about it. Look what he did last night. 3 hits. Home run, scored twice, had 1 hit short of the cycle in his first, you know, at bats in 2020 with the big club. So he is, for me, the ultimate tease. Because if he just had a little humility, because he drives management crazy with his attitude, right? He's got attitude. He knows he's good. His ego's out the door. And he's just so frustrating to you, right? Because you want him to play. And then you're just like, just shh. And go out and hit. Let your play and your hitting do the talking for you. Don't start doing the talking for yourself. But it's the Yankees. Okay, and because it's the Yankees, there's always a need. Maybe it's starting pitching. Maybe it's depth in the bullpen. Because now with Canley out, we don't know how, you know, we don't know how the closer is going to be when he gets back because he's been battling COVID. So Chapman, is he going to be good? Is it going to take him a while to get back into the swing of things? That's the question you have. So there are some folks who are saying, listen, let Frazier play. We'll get something from him with what we need. Do we need an extra bat? Well, no, he's your extra bat. You got Andujar on the alternate site somewhere. So he would be obviously a guy that you could bring over to hit as well. But I'm hearing, you know, fans want, let's move Frazier. Let's move him. Let's see if we can get something for him. Let's see if we can get that extra arm in the bullpen. Or is it a situation where, you know what? Why are we trading this guy? We've got injury woes with Stanton. We've got some injury concerns with Judge. We've got Brett Gardner in his last year, 1 year contract. I don't know how many more years they're going to extend him. I mean, he's a leader on that club. He's been, gosh, I remember the first time he walked in the clubhouse. I was there. He talked about how, you know, Willie Randolph was such a big influence on him and helped him out. And he just was just adored being a Yankee and loved being a Yankee. I remember years ago when we were living in the same town, I'd see him at the supermarket. He's like, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, "What are you doing here?" and he, people didn't recognize me. Walk in there, you know, his baseball cap, sunglasses. I'm trying to be cool. I don't want to out him. You know, so everybody's going to come over and then he'll spend the next hour and a half signing autographs. And then I got to talk to him at the stadium and he's looking at me with the jaundiced eye. But he's been a guy. He's been around. He's the link to that 2009 championship. But, you know, he's the fourth outfielder. But when you talk about that, I mentioned Judge. I mentioned Stanton. Listen, Aaron Hicks is another guy that misses some time. So do you really want to make that investment? Do you really want to trade Clint Frazier? Or should you keep him? Ryan Rucco, who did a phenomenal job with Last Man Standing, with Don and Peter on the Michael Kay Show today, voiced his opinion on whether the Yankees should keep or trade the redhead.
You know, I think that we've seen guys, right? Like, things end up happening that you don't foresee, and depth is very necessary. And especially in a season where, you know, you can't afford to be trotting out non-major leaguers in your lineup for an extended period of time. You want to have as much depth as possible. And you know, we saw last year, I think, you know, Michael said it the other day and he's 100% right. I think people underestimated the contributions that Frazier made to the Yankees a season ago. You know, when their lineup was in shambles early in the year, he was winning them games. And so, yeah, like long-term, is there definitely a fit in that outfield for him? I don't know. That's a legitimate question. But for this particular season, you know, do I think there should be any rush to deal Clint Frazier? No, because as we've seen already, you know, his bat has already played a role and could play a big role moving forward in a season where, you know, you don't want to get stuck, you know, playing someone who you don't feel like is major league ready for any length of time. And for Frazier, we know, is a big leaguer.
So I want to hear from you at 1-800-919-3776. Also on Twitter, at Hardesty ESPN, at ESPN NY 98_7FM. Do you agree with Ryan Rucco? Is this a scenario where the Yankees cannot take a chance and give up on this kid who every time he seems to get into the lineup, hits? He's just a natural hitter. He does a great job off speed. 95-mile-an-hour fastball, he makes contact. So do you make that move and say, you know what, we need a bullpen guy. We're going to need, because this is our opportunity. We have a great ball club. But because of injury, we're a little short in an area that we expected to have depth, which is the bullpen. So do you make that move? Do you use Clint Frazier to get that really good arm that you need in the bullpen? Or do you say, you know what? Listen, we got injuries to our outfielders. And we need his bat in the lineup.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
As you know, ESPN reported that the Seahawks cut a cornerback who was trying to sneak a guest into the team hotel. First report by the NFL Network, they waived rookie Kamar Silverman earlier this week after he was caught on video trying to sneak a woman into the team's hotel. The circumstances of his release, knowing that the woman was wearing Seahawks gear in an attempt to disguise herself as a player. And Ross Tucker tweets, Seahawks wouldn't cut Russell Wilson if he tried to sneak Ciara into the team hotel. Heard it here first. But while that's the funny part of it, what does that say? And see, this is why the NBA is doing all this testing. This is why the teams in bubbles are doing all this testing, for reasons like this. There's always one. There's always one who are trying to circumvent what's happening. I'm just saying. Our conversation here on Carlin, would you keep or trade Clint Frazier? At NYC Johnny Blaze says, the Yankees need to trade either Frazier or Andujar. They can't keep both, and he would trade Andujar. Jay Blaze, NYC, Uncle Al must keep Clint through this year out of necessity, but what does a package built around him and Sanchez bring the Yankees back in the offseason? That is the bigger question. 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Kevin in Washington Heights. Hey, Kev, you're next on 98.7.
Calvin, sorry.
Calvin, sorry about that. What's happening, Calvin?
It's okay, man. Larry, it's amazing. They stole my thunder with Frazier and Miguel Andujar. You can't keep both. And it hurts me to see Andujar in Scranton because he can be in another team. Remember, he got robbed for Rookie of the Year and batted 297, hit a bunch of doubles. I lost count of the doubles because he was hitting it through every alley and hit like 20-something home runs. Yeah. A guy that won Rookie of the Year that proved himself how much he can hit. Hitting 290 in this day and age in baseball is like equivalent to hitting 310. That's how much he hit that year. And he's not even in the lineup. So if I had to choose, I would clearly choose Miguel Andujar because he showed that he was a rookie. You know, to me, he was the Rookie of the Year. And Michael Kay, probably yourself, agree that he had an amazing season. So, I don't know. You should trade Clint Frazier and try to call like a team like the Kansas City Royals, believe it or not. Try to get some package of pitchers or whatever. But they have a closer that was a former Yankee, Ian Kennedy, that's pitching really well for them. He could be a good relief arm for the Yankees. Who knows? But just make sure you don't get Kennedy just him by himself. Make sure you get some prospects, of course, because he's been pitching well ever since he's been switched from a starting pitcher to a closer.
Kevin, let me ask you this. Two things. Number one, if Frazier had the same opportunities that Andujar had, could we make the same comments about Frazier that he would be a really good hitter that could possibly, you know, challenge for postseason awards?
I really don't know that, but I'm going to go with the for sure. I'm going to take the for sure. I'm going to go with real estate instead of the stocks.
All right.
Real estate is always a better business. There's the one that shows more is the more for sure. Here is Andujar. They already showed what he can do.
Okay, who's better defensively? Who's better defensively?
Oh, they bat both defensively in the same game, so it don't matter. I mean, I'm going with the more guarantee. I'm going with the real estate in New York City instead of the stock market.
I hear you, Kevin, but here's the issue. I hear what you're saying. Thanks for the phone call, but here's the issue. Since they're both bad defensively, if I'm going to trade one, I got to trade one who's a little better, who I think can get better defensively. And here's the thing. The reason why Andujar's not playing is because he's not good defensively. That's why he's not at third. And left field is not the answer for him. It's not the answer. Chris is in Rockland. Hey, Chris, you're next on 98.7.
What's up, Larry?
Hey, Chris.
I want to make a quick comment. I've been thinking a lot about that Clint Frazier and whether to keep or get rid of him. But shouldn't you – like, I'm on board. I love him. I think he's a great player. I think has a lot of potential. But if you have a chance to win this season, if they're getting towards the trade deadline and you know, they're – which I think they are. They're going to be in first place. They're going to, you know, have a chance to win. I think you gotta trade them for what you can get and load that bullpen up because, you know, you can never have too many pitchers, especially in the playoffs. You can never have too many bullpen arms in the playoffs. So I think if you can get something for them this year, you got to try to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because okay. I know as a Yankee fan, I've been spoiled that they are in it every year, but I feel like you can never kind of assume one thing, you know.
So you do believe that your bullpen now is a little short with Kainley out?
Yeah, because, I mean, they have some studs, you know, but like you said before, Chapman, you don't know what Chapman's going to be like coming back from COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, you got out of Vino, you got Britton, but you lose Kainley and, you know, God forbid one of those other guys go down, then we're, you know, where are we sitting then? Afterwards,
do you like Hader from Milwaukee?
I love him. If they could pull some magic, if Cashman could pull some magic to get to Hader, that would be unbelievable. Especially as a lefty coming out, you know, that would be. I think that's something that could put them over the top for this season. Which, if you have a chance, I think you always got to go for it.
All right, Chris. Thanks for checking in. So Chris and Bruce from Flushing are on the same page. They want the kid from Milwaukee Hayter. Jamie's in Scotch Plains. Hey, Jamie, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, Larry. How you doing?
Great, Jamie. What's up, partner?
I definitely agree with the last two callers. I would look to trade Frazier. Now, I'm not going to just trade him for anything. We definitely have to get something good for him. But I think when you think about, one, that Andujar could do the same thing that he's doing from the DH spot, if not better. I mean, Andujar uses all fields. He's a doubles hitter. He's a doubles machine. He hit almost 300. I mean, that's the guy that should be in the lineup. And not only that, but as a fourth outfielder, I actually prefer Tauchman over Frazier.
Wow,
he's
really?
Lefty. He okay. hit well last year. Mm-hmm. He plays all three positions. He plays them well. Mm-hmm. I think he actually provides a little bit more than Frazier. And then let's not forget about, you know, the problems Frazier had last year when he got sent down. He didn't report to AAA. He made some remarks that weren't very good at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's the cutout for the Yankees culture.
All right. All right, Jamie. Thanks for checking in. That is an interesting point. And that is the question that you find out about young players, right? Because young players are often immature. Was there frustration on his part because he was sent down when he felt that he did not get his opportunity and he felt that he could really do what they need, that he didn't get the opportunity to show that he could really help this team? Probably. Is there a better way to show it? Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. The way he showed it was not the right way to show it. However, has he learned from that? Has he been the good soldier? Is he a guy now that has matured because they sent him down? That he has to learn that it's a team game and you're part of a team. And what's best for the team, sometimes it's not best for you individually. But you go down, you get your seasoning, you come back, and you show that you're ready to be a part of this team and you're ready to do whatever it takes to help the team win. Sometimes that's hard for a young player who may have been hearing or reading his press clippings about how good he really is. Because once again, I don't care who you talk to, they will acknowledge that he is an outstanding hitting talent. Quick hands, quick bat, everything that you want to talk about. Can hit for power, can hit to the opposite field, can hit to the alleys. A lot like Andujar. Okay, a lot. However, the question becomes, will he and Andujar together, will they make the sacrifice and do what they need to do to get better defensively, to feel their position, to do the fundamentals so they can improve, so that they can be an asset to their team, as opposed to a situation where, you know, we're looking like, I can't play this guy right now because he's going to hurt us. Even to the point that you can't play them for five innings before bringing in a defensive replacement. I mean, is it that bad? And as a young player, what do you need to do? What's the extra things? What is the initiative that you show to make sure that you get the extra time in the outfield, that you go in early and work with getting hit balls to the infield if you're Andujar, getting hit balls to the outfield if you're Clint Frazier, to make sure that you are better, you improve, that you become an asset and not a liability?
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Trevor Scales, we'll talk a little college football at the bottom of the hour. You just heard what happened that Mark Emmerich of the NCAA says there'll be no championships. Well, that's in some football. It's a mess. Trevor Scales will figure it out for us at the bottom of the hour here on 98.7 ESPN. Also on Twitter, you can weigh in. Should Clint Frazier be traded or do you want to keep him? It started out heavy. Keep Frazier, keep Frazier, keep Frazier. Want to keep him. Of late, there's been a surge of we need to move him because of the fact, much like a number of other Yankee fans feel, they're an arm short in that bullpen. So they're thinking maybe they need to move the kid to get a little more depth. We'll see what happens. Freddie's in Hackensack. Hey, Freddie, you're next on 98.7.
What's up, Larry? How's everything?
Everything's good, Larry, partner. What's going on?
Good, good. Larry, I have to disagree with a lot of the Yankees. I'm a big-time diehard Yankee fan. I have to disagree with a lot of the Yankee fans and your previous caller. You don't trade Clint Frazier. And everybody said, oh, we need the arms. We need the arms. Larry, I've watched almost – I'm 41. I watched almost every playoff game I can think of. There hasn't been one game where the Yankees have got blown out, where the pitcher has done terrible. We always end up in playoff games where we're losing like 1-0 or 2-0, and you're hoping the big batter comes up and does something, and he doesn't do anything. This kid is going to provide a spark, and I think that you don't trade a player like this. You keep him because we have enough arms, and you get rid of and you keep him. And you know who I think you trade, and along with Andujar, Tyler Wade. If you want another arm, you trade Tyler Wade and Andujar. Don't trade this kid. This kid, you can teach him defensively. This kid is willing to learn. He's young. He's teachable. He came up, had 3 hits, like it was nothing. Mm-hmm. And you want to trade him for an arm? No, 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 no. Cashman does well with getting relief pitchers, and we have never have lost a playoff game where we're losing 8-0 or, oh, man, the bullpen blew it or our starter blew it. No, 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 no. Keep this kid. This kid is going to be the future of the Yankees. Thanks, Larry.
All right, Freddie. Thanks for the phone call. I hear what you're saying, but to be fair, I don't think you'll get the same caliber of talent for Tyler Wade. Now, if you're packaging Wade and Andujar, I understand that. But then again, Tyler Wade now gives you something that you need as far as depth in the infield. You know, I mean, Aaron Boone was just talking a couple of days ago about Gleyber Torres, you know, now at shortstop, and that he still has confidence in him, but he's made a couple of errors in that position. You know, and that was a concern when they didn't re-sign Didi Gregorius, that could Gleyber, even though he was originally a shortstop, you know, could he handle that shortstop position? So I think Tyler Wade is a guy who, because of what he brings to the table, his speed, especially this year, he's going to be the guy that's going to be on second base and to go in the extra innings. You know, it's going to be him. His speed, what he brings to the table, his ability to play different positions. Freddie, you're not going to move a guy like that because of his versatility. So I hear what you're saying, but I think they're going to have to go in a different direction there. Buddha's in the Bronx. Hey, Buddha, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, what's going on, Uncle Larry? How you doing, big bro?
I'm doing good, partner. What's happening?
Hey, no, I just got to address two things, man. One thing, like, with the family, you know, my brother Trey, you know, talking that jump the other night about Ben Simmons. Listen here, like Mark is not married to Sam Darnold. You know, as a Sixers fan, I'm not married to Ben Simmons. Mm. Like him, he's got a lot of talent, but I tell you this much, you know, just as a real Sixers fan, with Embiid, you know, he gives me everything he got. I mean, his body's going to fall apart, and we know that. But, you know, each year, he comes back with a new tool in the toolkit. Mm-hmm. You know, Simmons, man, 3 years, you can't get a jump shot? Come on, man. I remember when they was calling Magic Tragic Magic?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? After that series, yeah. What did he do? The shot might have not looked pretty, but he worked on it. He got it going. I mean, you know, Simmons is all right. My issue with the Knicks is basically, you know, as a New York fan, you know, every once in a while, I like to take my little high yellow thing down there to the garden, you know what I mean, and sit down and have a nice meal and see some actual, like, basketball. And it's been a minute, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I love you to death, man, as Knicks fans, but your tolerance level, woo! I mean, listen here, man. Yeah, like, after a while, you get tired of looking at that product, you know, no matter who the court jester is in charge. It's ridiculous. But anyway, moving forward, like, yeah, I just got on Milton earlier. Listen, Milton, man, you know, you're talking about Stanton. Let me just throw a couple of names out there for you. Jackson, Nettles, Guidry, Hunter, Gossage, Dent, Randolph, Mattingly, Jeter, Rivera. You know, we have a standard here, family. You know what I mean? That being in the runnings. Like, listen, as a New Yorker, thank God my father introduced me to the Yankees at an early age, because at least I've had something to watch. You understand what I'm saying? There's been something you could count on. There's been something you could go across this country and visit your family or go on vacation and stick your chest out about. You can't do it with the Jets. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you can't do it with any of these other teams. I mean, I'm not a big hockey fan. I guess you could do it with the Rangers, but they've had drought years too. I mean, come on, man. Listen, this about Stanton and the injuries or the problem. Listen here. It ain't about no injuries. It ain't about his biceps. It ain't about that MVP. that means absolutely nothing when your team doesn't win. You know, the issue is the three swing at bats, the five swing at bats. Give me a moment. Give me a moment when he's later in the game, when you needed a hit, not just a home run, anything. Advance a runner, give me a sack fly, give me his moment. He doesn't have one. And that's what the fans are not tolerant of here. And you know what? I'm not tolerant of it either. Like I said, run down some of those names. Some of those names I gave you were Hall of Famers. Some of those names I gave you were role players. But when they had a chance to do something, they took the moment and did something with it. We're not accepting that nonsense. You know, he's hurt. You know, listen here. There have been a lot of people that have been hurt. You know, Don Mattingly, God bless him. You know, God rest the bosses, you know, the boss, because, you know, he was the kind of owner that you want on your team. You know, not always politically correct, not always nice to everybody, but you listen, we expect the win, and it was a part of the culture. Now, in Mattingly, you feel bad for him, because by the time that they got to be a winning team, his back was broke, and he was done, but look at how he performed. In that last series he had against Seattle.
Yep.
This is what makes people love you here. All this other nonsense, this tolerance in this town of losing, next year we're going to get better. You know, even with the Jets fans, some of the most popular Jets fans, every year it's this positivity. About what? What are you looking forward to when they get back on the field? Well, what the hell are you looking forward to? They're going to lose Le'Veon Bell the right way? You know that's not going to happen. You're going to lose your coach, and you're going to start all over again. So like I said, and from the bottom of my heart, like the only team you could truly depend on in this town, and we're not accepting these 10, 11-year droughts. Boone got to get it together, too. Boone got to get it together, too.
I'll say this, Boone, and thanks for the phone call. This is a year where the Yankees have given – there's everything is on this team. The shortage was the ace. Well, they went out and got the ace. Everything is on this team. And you have depth. You have great starters. You have a bullpen. This is a team that should win it all. I'm just saying. On paper, this is a team that should win it all. And if they don't, nobody's going to talk about how many wins Aaron Boone has gotten in his 3 years. They're going to talk about the fact that with the talent he had, what was he able to do? That's the issue.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Friend of the show. Normally, he is takes us back to school on ESPN New York Tonight, Monday through Fridays from 10 to midnight. Now he's just a regular guy hanging out with me on Carlin. He is Trevor Scales of ESPN. Hey, Trev.
How we doing, Larry? How we doing? How we doing?
We're confused.
Listen, you and me both. Right? Like, looking at the landscape, it's like, okay, I don't know where this is going to turn next, but you got to be ready for anything at this point, right?
Absolutely. Now, Trevor, for the audience that may not be familiar with you, tell us about the shows that you have on the network.
Absolutely. So I'm mainly on your digital properties, your social properties. I do Sports Center on Snapchat 3 nights a week, but make sure you check it out all 7 days of the week. We're on that. You open up the app, go to the original content page, and click on SportsCenter, and we'll be right there on your phone giving you the very latest on the day and night in sports. Other than that, I pop up on, hopefully, what is to be the college football show on Twitter, as well as linear television SportsCenter every now and again, just to kind of say hello to the people and make sure they know I'm still around there.
Yeah, and you do a good job at that, my friend. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so very much. You know, trying to match the standard you set, baby.
Well, you know, listen, I have high standards.
I like it.
There's no question about that. Trevor, here's where I want to start. I want to start with the representatives of the players of all five Power Five conferences and the statement they put out earlier this week, which read as follows for people who don't know. We all want to play football this season. Establish universal mandated health and safety procedures and protocols to protect college athletics against COVID-19 among all conferences throughout the NCAA. Give players the opportunity to opt out and respect their decision. Guarantee eligibility whether a player chooses to play the season or not. Use our voices to establish open communication and trust between players and officials, ultimately to create a college football players association. Once again, this representatives of the players of all Power Five conferences. Trev, it sounds great. I applaud it. How realistic is it?
that's what we're seeing unfold, actually, when it comes to the decisions that the Pac-12 and Big Ten made. We're seeing, with that statement presented, and to go back to a little bit further in the timeline regarding that specific statement, if you look at the top of that statement that they released, it was hashtag we want to play, hashtag we are united. Mm-hmm. Those are two separate social movements amongst some of the biggest names in college football. We Are United started out of the Pac-12. If you remember, a large contingent of players didn't feel safe with regards to entering the season and wanted to have a discussion with the Pac-12 commissioner to sort of iron out a lot of the things that you just detailed in that recent statement released by players. So what they saw as a plan to play was coming up with those universal standards across at least their conference. And then, yes, specifically bringing up some semblance of a players association so that they have a voice in the room that they've always been completely silent in. Those stipulations were the theoretical plan to play. And when we got into that play, I think we were going to have another real discussion about what is amateurism at that level. Because the only reason, if we're going to be real about this, they were actually considering this was the financial hit that institutions were going to take. So if we are going to assess their value to the university through the revenue that they can bring in, how then can you rationalize not incorporating them into the revenue stream? So that was going to open a Pandora's box if they got down to that discussion and brought up the Players Association and really looked into it. So from what we're seeing from the decisions earlier this week from the Big Ten and the Pac-12, it is assumed that they aren't really trying to have that discussion right now. It may be something that they have kicked the can down the proverbial road for a little bit, but we're having some semblance of a reckoning when it comes to how we understand these football players, these student athletes, all of the revenue generating sports, what role they play in the ecosystem that is the billion-dollar business of collegiate athletics.
And so in other words, you're saying really, Trevor, this is the first step in them using this unfortunate situation as some leverage. So that right. Now going forward, they want to be involved in these conversations, and rightfully so. But they also want to use this as, hey, you know what? We're opening the door. Not only do we want to be involved in this, but there's some other things that we want to be involved with as well. Because let's face it, even though we're not pros, we're mm-hmm. not being paid, and we don't have mm-hmm. a union, we still need protection. Because mm-hmm. we understand that the institution has an obligation to the institution, not necessarily to us.
Right. They know that they are a big part of this money, right? Like, they recognize that. And because they know that they're a part of the money, they should be valued as such. And if you're going to trot me out there, the same way the NFL is trotting their employees out there, the same way the NBA has trotted their employees out there, they recognize that they are a little bit different than just the standard student that walks in and pays tuition on a yearly basis. They have a different level of income generation for that university. They see that they are part of that economy in a very real sense. And because of that, and really just how intertwined all of this as well is a key point, right? Like, the fact that we're having this discussion courtesy of a pandemic that involves the health and safety of student athletes shows you just how much we can't separate just the idea of being a student and the idea of being a revenue generator when it comes to these revenue generating sports and the athletes that participate in them. So, like, all of that is just sort of, it was the perfect storm for these players to kind of bring this topic up so that they could have a real discussion about what their role is in all of this.
Trevor Scales covers college football for us here on 98.7 ESPN. Is joining me. This is Hardesty for Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. All right, Trevor, I want to get to NCAA President Mark Emmert in a second, but help me out with this because I'm trying to get this through my thick head. You've got all these various conferences who are saying we're not going to perform when fall sports is done. We're not down. You've got other conferences who are going forward. Mm-hmm. Trevor, what is going to be that deciding factor? Because when I talk to other people who follow college sports, they indicate, well, you know, when everybody gets on the campus and everybody starts to really go through the idea of practice and getting ready, because you notice that the dates times are like TBD on schedules because we're not really sure what's going to happen. So are we guaranteed that we're going to have college football? And what's that going to look like if we've got some conferences playing and other conferences not?
I can't sit here and say that I'm confident that we're even going to get this season off the ground. Okay. I know that the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 will do everything in their power to get it cracking, and I know they aren't going to stop for much. It's going to take some sort of catastrophic circumstance for them to really come to Jesus, essentially, and go full stop on what they've already planned on doing. I do think it's just such a messed up situation to really even conceive, because there is certainly a point to saying, well, how can we not think about, you know, how can we shut down the idea of playing football if we haven't even thought about shutting down the idea of bringing students back to campus at large? Because it's not as if we're mitigating risk by too large of a factor. But I will say, when you talk about traveling a team and going on the road, and even if you're only doing conference opponents, there's still a factor of spread that gets increased tenfold if you're going to try to play games between institutions. So that's where a little bit of the argument goes away from me. But that still doesn't take away from the fact of just how sticky the situation as a whole is when it comes to thinking about students being on campus. We're taking all of these precautions, but they're not completely mitigated because, you know, we can't control every single student that's enrolled at that university. They're going to do what they do. And from there, how exactly are you telling me that they're safer having not played football?
All right, Trevor, you for people who don't know, pride of Harvard University, played in the National Football League with the Atlanta Falcons. Take me back to your college football days. Arguments on both sides. Are the players better off being on campus where they are under supervision, right, where they're with their team, where they're with their coaches, where they're going to be limited? Or are they better if you say, you know what, we're not sure what's going to happen, so we're sending them home?
I think it's a sliding scale for each program, just as it is a sliding scale for every state in this country, right? Like, similarly, in that you are basically subject to the jurisdiction and the resources, most importantly, of whatever college you're at. So guys like Trevor Lawrence and Najee Harris out of Alabama coming out and saying, I feel safe as all outdoors here. Like, this is much safer than my home situation. I would not doubt that for 1 second, because Alabama and Clemson got all the money in the world to make sure that that's the case. But what do we do with, say, I don't know, in Arkansas? I'm not entirely sold that their resources are up to snuff in order to keep their athletes safe. We could even go down to, you know, group of five conferences, the Tulanes, the Toledos, right? Like, all the Maction stuff, right? We don't know that they have those same resources. Well, we know that they don't have the same resources. We don't know if they have the same viability to kind of keep up a safety protocol that keeps their students safe. So all that to say, it's a sliding scale for every one of these universities. And that's where we need a central body of leadership that would come in and help supplement the safety protocols and resources so that they could kind of sustain those. And I'm looking directly at the NCAA, whom we haven't heard from, but that's a different topic.
Well, we heard from them today, Trevor, because President Mark Emmert said that there will not be any fall NCAA championships because there's not enough schools participating due to the ongoing corona pandemic. And that impacts 22 championships, including FCS football, but it doesn't include FBS football. So translate that for folks who aren't really sure what that means.
So it's a matter of understanding that prior to all of this mess, the NCAA never really had jurisdiction over the FBS football playoff because it was a completely different event. That's why the trophy never looked like the standard sanctioned NCAA events trophy, that big old ugly brown joint that they hand out, right? So that was like your key indicator that that wasn't the same sort of space. So they've never really had jurisdiction over over the football championship specifically. So I say all that to say, NCAA didn't do too much with this statement. By not saying we ain't going, by saying we're not going to have ball championships, that's great. I don't want to take them away from like making that decision at the very least and announcing it to the public. But when it comes to them actually helping out anything at the FBS level, where we're really having a serious discussion regarding the resources and how much of a hit the budget can take, they didn't really do much on that front. They continued to kind of remove themselves from having to be in a decision-making position so that they can take zero responsibility should things go awry, but they also get all of the kudos should things go well.
Is there a way, college football-wise, that you could have kind of a bubble conference-wise, that you could have a bubble where you could kind of protect your players similar to what we're seeing in the NBA and in the NHL?
I think it's somewhat feasible, but I think it would only be doable from a Power Five standpoint. I think if you take five host cities, take your Power Five teams there, but I think I had heard discussions of some folks on campus that are like really tuned in with college football programs and everything. The issue that you run into is just space, frankly, because what we're seeing with the NCAA, or excuse me, with the NBA and their bubble and the MLS and their bubble, you're looking at ramping up just personnel per team by about four times. And so if we're talking 12 teams within an FBS conference, right, and we're doing 200 people per program, not to mention folks to maintain safety, we're getting astronomical numbers just as far as trying to have somewhere to house people, right? Granted, you got the benefit of being able to roommate people up with college players, but we're still running out of space very quickly. And football, again, being the ultimate contact sport, puts you in a much tougher position to kind of get this stuff under control. And it being 100 and 200 people programs, it makes outbreaks that much more difficult to deal with. So it would be another challenge in and of itself. And the NBA certainly was one. But do these conferences have the same type of money that the NBA has? I doubt it. And do they have the space to pull it off?
Interesting. One last question. I'm going to ask you to go back to your days with the Atlanta Falcons. No preseason games, NFL, and you're going to have your sessions against your own team. So you're going to scrimmage against your team every day, every day, every day. What's the difference, Trevor, in facing your team every day as opposed to banging on somebody else for the preseason? And no preseason games either.
Right. It's a tempo change, one, and I think that's always going to be notable when it comes to you can't necessarily go the all out that you're used to when you know you can just tee off on a different jersey. And chemistry-wise, right, like I went through this in college. When you hit your teammates for about 4 or 5 weeks, you get tired of them real quick, right? Like you just can't, you're spending every waking moment with these individuals. So it's like a matter of legitimate team chemistry that doesn't allow you to have the same space that you kind of need and the vent against another opponent that you need in order to kind of keep things rolling. It won't be too detrimental. I don't want to blow that up to be more than it truly is, but that is a factor in a sense. But mostly it becomes more of an internal grind on your physical team, right? Like you're beating each other up versus being able to go again outside of your roster and not take the shots on your backups or your 1v1s so that you can kind of maintain a little bit of depth. You're not going out there against your own and kind of, you know, potentially injuring your own. So it may not pan out to be much, but having to turn that dial back in that regard as to, you know, what the NFL has six expanded to, it's going to be interesting to see.
In theory, could it affect the style? Could it affect the crispness of play at the beginning of the season, whenever the season begins?
Definitely. It will absolutely draw time because you're not going to get the different looks that you come to expect when you're scrimmaging other teams. There's an element of surprise to what another opponent brings into your practice. You're now having to just kind of go off skeleton looks or play cards that the scout team draws up, but you're never going to be able to actually react to the personnel that they have to offer. So it's going to be a different sort of ramping up phase. And we're always used to like the first 4 weeks of the regular season being sort of a greasing up of the wheels for these teams, but it may take even longer now that we don't have a preseason to rely on, nor do we have scrimmages.
It's fascinating. Trevor Scales, always a pleasure, my friend. Keep up the great work.
Pleasure's all mine, man. You do the same. Take care.
All right, talk soon. Trevor Scales covers college football for us. Normally he's on the ESPN New York Tonight, but we figured we'd use him tonight to kind of bring some clarity to what's going on with NCAA college football. It is so weird, even in this pandemic-shortened season, to not see the San Antonio Spurs in the postseason in the NBA. 22 consecutive years. You talk about sustainable success. You talk about making the playoffs in the NBA 22 consecutive years. And remember, Tim Duncan has not been on this team for a while. They lost Kawhi Leonard and was still able to get to the postseason. Players age, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, are all the players that have been staples on this San Antonio team. What does it say about their hierarchy? What does it say about Greg Popovich as a coach? What does it say about what they've been able to do and the system that they have and the drafting they've been able to do that they have had that type of success? It's just crazy. Also, I am looking forward to watching tonight. Now, Nets and Blazers. Damian Lillard has been putting on a show. Damian Lillard, when you start, because when you look at the NBA record book and you see what Wilt Chamberlain was able to do and how he was able to dominate during his time in the league and the numbers that he was able to put up. And when you start putting up numbers where you're in his neighborhood, that means that you've been phenomenal. Well, that's what Damian Lillard's been doing. 60 plus games the past two games. He's averaging 56 points a game over the last two games. And they need this game to get into the postseason. It's a good thing the Nets don't need it. And listen, give the Nets some credit. With Jacques Vaughn and Brooklyn, they've played well. No Caris LeVert, who was traveling with them. Forget about no Kyrie Irving. You know you weren't going to have him. You know you wasn't going to have Kevin Durant. You know you weren't going to have a number of the other players who have been so instrumental in this team playing well. They've played well. They locked the seventh seed up. And people were like, are they even going to make the playoffs with all the injuries they had with COVID and people opting out and stuff like that? So give Jacques Vaughn and that Brooklyn Nets team some credit. They're going to face the Toronto Raptors next week when the NBA playoffs start. But tonight it's going to be fascinating. I'll be looking to check out Damian Lillard and Skinny Mello and the crew of the Portland Trailblazers who need this game to make the postseason. So that should be a good one. Speaking of the Knicks, as I was, Jay Will, who, as you know, is going to be part of our new morning show beginning Monday morning right here on 98.7 ESPN, along with Key and Zubin, 6 to 9, had an interesting statement today about the Knicks. Here's what he had to say.
I haven't seen the Knicks trend in this direction in a long time. In a long time. And I even give you insight, and this is something that's a little bit more technical that I'm sure a lot of fans won't know. And he had to go on TV. He went on First Take, and I think he got a little bit ahead of himself. But I ultimately do want to pay him homage because he is very brilliant. They also have a guy around them called Steve Stout. Now, Steve Stout owns a company called Translation Media. And Steve Stout is associated with Jay-Z, some of the biggest rappers, some of the biggest influencers in the game. Now, I know fans can say, why is Steve Stout important? Steve Stout, from an image perspective, is consulting now with the Knicks organization. And what I'm watching is the amount of people, right? I know fans think that it's a matter of time before James Dolan messes this one up. But I will say I have not seen James Dolan surround himself with the volume of people that think the way these people think. These people think differently. Leon Rose, different. Steve Stout, different. World Wide West, different. Kenny Payne, different. Tom Thibodeau, different. Like, and they are not afraid to share their opinion. It's not going to be one of these passive-aggressive hires. You have people that have been in this industry that made a lot of money, that have a lot of clout, that are not afraid to say, nah, Jim, this is the way you do it. We're going to do it this way. And I think Jim finally has those people in place, which actually those words coming out of my mouth is shocking, Alan. I never thought it could happen.
Jay Williams with Han Solo today on 98.7 ESPN. I'm telling you, And he's not alone. You're starting to hear this. So now, here I'm torn. And you have a couple minutes to call me at 1-800-919-3776. You can still weigh in about Clint Frazier, whether you can trade him or not. But I want to add this to our conversation because we can talk about more than one thing. Should I fall? I feel like I'm being bamboozled. I feel like I'm about to fall for the okey-doke. On the one hand, from a sportscaster, reporter, analytical person that's covered the NBA for decades, I know what Jay Williams is saying. I understand it. It's a sense of these are the people that other organizations would also hire, and you have them too. Okay? As opposed to, they just come here for the money. Okay? Because once again, I felt this way about Phil Jackson. I thought Phil Jackson was going to be a guy who knew what championships were about because he had got, 11 rings? Okay? 11 rings. 10 coaching. 12 rings. He's got 2 as a player. All right? So, you know, he coached championship teams. He knew what championship caliber people needed and looked like. And so I felt both as a reporter and as a fan, that he would be the right guy for this job, that he would be a guy that would turn this franchise in the right direction. He didn't do it. And so, logically, as I look at this and talk to people around the league, what Jay Williams is saying is true, and the reaction that he said with Allen at the end was, I can't believe I'm saying this. I never thought I would say it. And he's not the only person that's saying this. Okay, there is a feeling that, hey, they're figuring it out. Now, let's see what they do next. Because now they have people in place who are competent and know what they're doing. And I'm not saying the other people didn't know what they're doing, but I'm saying, look, there's an A list of folks you can hire, and there's B, C, D, and E list that you can hire. Okay? And when you talk to folks around the league, they give you the idea that these are among the cream of the crop of folks that you can hire. Are you ready to buy in? Or is it too early? Obviously, you want to see obviously the bottom line is going to be who is going to be on the court when they hit the court in December. That's ultimately your bottom line. But are you at least encouraged because of what you're seeing with people being put in place?
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.